Hello, and welcome to Living Vertical Radio, where we change the narrative of media by introducing you to creative and innovative individuals that inspire you with their unique stories. Our host is Cystine Duckworth, and you can call in or Skype into this program by calling 1-646-668-2928 #1. Please make sure your surrounding area is quiet because this is a live program. One Sure Sign Mobile Notary of Frisco, Texas provides professional notary service across the Dallas metro area. Our notary professionals are ready to help you with loan closings, power of attorney, fingerprinting, and other notary services. We meet you at your location of choice, your home, office, hospital, or local coffee shop, convenient to your schedule. Reliable, professional, and affordable. One Sure Sign is happy to support Living Vertical Radio here in Texas. Mention you heard this ad on Living Vertical for $5 off any notary service. Interested in advertising on our podcast with a listening audience of over 800,000? You can do a 15-second business ad, a 30-second radio ad, or a 10-minute interview radio ad. Our prices start out at $50. Contact us at info@verticalmediagroup.com. Our pricing is made to give everyone the ability to advertising no matter the budget. Thank you. And here's your host, Cystine Duckworth.
Welcome to Utopia, humanity's second home for over two centuries. It is a world controlled by the military and corporations, waging war with advanced alien races. But 18-year-old Carter Sanders is about to change the rules of the game. Freshly conscripted into boot camp, he needs all his brains and ability to survive skirmishes and develop allies among his fellow recruits who resent his privilege. Training exercises in weaponry, close-quarter combat, strategy and tactics, and missions test his bravery, while female recruits test his moral fiber in close situations. That's part of the synopsis for The Commander, Guardian of Utopia. It's a new book by Kevin Groh. Kevin is a storyteller, a dreamer, industrial engineer, and best-selling author of the epic military sci-fi fantasy series, Omni Legends. The 20-something German writer became a sensation in the sci-fi market overseas and is now on a mission to capture the imagination of American readers. His Omni Legends book series includes the best-selling sub-series, The Commander, The Black Wanderer, and The Shadow Guard. Join me in welcoming Kevin Groh. Kevin, I'm glad to have you on here today. I'm excited to talk about your book and to promote your book as well. So we're going to go right into answer questions, but first I want to say I love that picture behind you.
It's not the first time it's mentioned.
I'm a huge sci-fi fan too. I have my preferences, but I'm a huge sci-fi fan. So this is great, you know, interviewing you. So how did you get into writing, and how did you decide that sci-fi and fantasy were the two genres that you really liked?
Well, I've been a nerd ever since I can remember. So I've been watching the Marvel movies. I've been playing video games since I was 7 years old. So the whole fantasy and science fiction, it was part of my life ever since I can remember. Mm-hmm. And one day I got to admit it was really boredom. I was a trainee for being an industrial clerk. And usually if you're a trainee, people do not really give you much tasks to do too. Yeah. They are happy if you're just busy and keep quiet and they can do their work. So I was not busy at all. And I figured I have to look as if I'm working somehow.
Right.
So I opened up Word and then I just figured, what would a story look like if I would tell it? Because usually if I'm watching movies or playing games, there are always some components I think that I would do differently. Mm-hmm. And that's when I really started to think about what would a story look like if I'm telling it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I scripted my first book. Took me roughly, I think, 2 years to write the story.
Nice, okay.
Yeah, because I had to write it over a course of months. By now, I have in Germany published 9 books already.
Mm-hmm.
There was a moment when I really thought that I've written 2 books, I published them, nothing much happened. It's just for my own personal bookshelf, so I could say this is my book.
Right.
And I was
right.
Done with that. Like, cross it off the bucket list and, mm-hmm. and move on.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 3.5 years ago, I met my girlfriend, and then I read my books to her. It was like a ritual for us in the evening. And she told me, you know what? This is a gift you have. You should not just like leave it be.
Right.
Do more.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's when I like resumed doing that and actually became an author.
That was really cool that you had someone to really support you and encourage you like that as well. I think a lot of creative people walk around with things in their head and they're like, well, I just don't know what to do with this. And all it takes is sometimes it just takes one person to say something or, you know, whatnot to push you out there, which is really cool. I come from a family of professors and teachers. I did not share nothing I wrote with them, okay? Because I was like, that meant more research or, you know, oh, you got to research this. I'm like, no,
yeah.
You know, so, but, so wow, all those books, that makes you such a prolific writer. So when do you get time to write? I mean, like, you know, are you structured to a certain time to write or when do you do your writing?
Whenever I can. So I have a full-on 100% home office contract. Even before the whole pandemic stuff.
Okay.
So I can like stretch my work to whenever it suits me best.
Mm-hmm.
And I just stop working in the afternoon usually, and then I switch laptops and I continue writing.
I like that idea of switching laptops because it really takes you out of the work mode and puts you somewhere different. So I have to say, when you were a gamer, what was your favorite game?
Oh, geez, there are lots. But I think my favorite game series is the Assassin's Creed series.
Uh-huh. Okay, right. I know my son is a huge gamer, and we used to talk about the games, and he felt that he loved that series because he loved the storyline.
Yeah.
He loved the whole story. He said it was one of the best games for him. So whenever he critiques games, it's all about how good the story is.
So. What I do... Exactly the same, yeah.
Right. So tell me, what were your sci-fi influences, like authors or movies? What really influenced you a lot?
Well, I mean, the first science fiction I ever saw, I think it was Star Wars, like ages ago.
Yeah.
But the video game that actually tipped me off to write my whole Commander series was the Mass Effect games.
Okay.
So I have to say, and some of the people who read my books, they also told me, like, I can see Mass Effect in there somewhere. It's like between the lines, I can see the connections. That's really what set me off and gave me the idea to not just write one book, but to unfold the story over the course of 4 books.
Okay, so we're talking about the Commander. So what went into character development for the Commander? Because I love the fact that he's a guy from privilege and, you know, he's kind of making his own way. So what was the development that you had? Where did you get that from?
I think that when I planned out the whole story of the Commander, which will go even beyond the actual Commander series, I knew that Carter needed to be able to have some resources he could get to.
Mm-hmm.
So he needed to have some sort of money income because he's mainly a soldier the whole time and they don't make that much money.
Right.
So he needed basically the money to later be able to finance his gadgets and gear and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhat like Batman, basically.
Mm-hmm. Right. And what challenges did you have as you developed your characters? Were any of the characters somewhat designed after maybe people you knew or saw?
Well, I'm using role models that I've seen in movies or video games, and
okay.
then just see how can I remodel them into what I need them to be.
Okay. All right. So there's no bosses or friends that you killed off in the book, right, as a character?
not yet, at least. The only role model that I'm using for the protagonist usually is myself. I mean,
yeah.
usually, you know, if you're writing characters, they are all going to be a part of your own personality.
Mm-hmm.
And then Carter is pretty much like me
okay.
in some ways.
All right. So what do you love about the book now that you're finished with it? I know that when you're writing, there's some parts you're like, oh God, it's, you know, do I want to keep doing it? Especially like editing. But what made you really fall in love with the book? Because I do think at some point we do fall in love with our work.
Yeah, and that's something I noticed with many of my books is when I read them myself, and which I do like over and over again while editing also,
mm-hmm.
The parts that I enjoy most are the actual conversation between the characters.
Okay.
Because I'm trying to write them as authentic as I would like talk to somebody to
uh-huh.
make it sound like an anyday conversation you might have.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Giving some insight into the background stories of the characters, making them more come alive.
Mm-hmm. How much research do you do in like... when it comes to, because I know you're an engineer, so how much research do you do when it comes into the technological part of the story? I know that I had a creative writing teacher one time tell me, don't get so caught up in, you know, the technology part. Just write it. And he said, people will understand what you're saying. So how important to you and your book that you don't go too far in the technology so your readers can't really get it, but far enough to where they're excited about it?
To be honest, I do not do research at all.
All right.
I mean, I'd say a solid understanding of technology up to a certain point, and I think that's enough because people, I know that people understand and believe if you are like just explaining it well enough. It doesn't even have to be realistic at all, as long as
yeah.
you're explaining it in a way that people can grasp it.
Right. Okay. Good. Good. So what do you see? Because I read another article that you did and you said that you see it as your responsibility to give people food for thought. And that gave me a great segue into, you know, shall we include science fiction under speculative fiction category?
You mean like it's somewhat realistic to a point?
Somewhat realistic, but it allows the reader to, like, go beyond what you just wrote. Think beyond, change their perspective maybe on some things, but, you know, maybe you've opened up something to give them something to look beyond. So speculative fiction, I see a lot of people coming out and saying my book is, you know, sci-fi, but it's speculative fiction, which means I want you to think about some of the things that I'm talking about.
Okay, yeah, I think that's what usually you have when you have a story. It doesn't matter if it's a movie or any other kind of medium, that people have to get into it emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that in lots of times on Netflix and stuff, that people basically they side with characters who are like stalkers, murderers, whatever,
mm-hmm.
because they get an idea of how this person feels, how they got there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to use my book to basically also make people think about a situation. The commander, for example, you have a planet that is ruled by the military and by companies,
mm-hmm.
which automatically brings a lot of suppression, oppression of people. The working class has to suffer. Mm-hmm. And you have to get into this whole idea and think about what would a person feel like who grew up as a privileged and then first gets in touch with the whole poverty and the violence.
Mm-hmm.
What would that person think, feel about it, simply?
Mm-hmm.
And he's getting in touch with new comrades who are coming from this part of the world.
Right.
He doesn't immediately understand why they are so angry at him just for being privileged. And I just
right.
want to make people, like, get out of their own minds and just
mm-hmm.
try to see things from different angles.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. That's what you should do in real life as well.
Mm-hmm. So now you're popular in Germany already, Europe already. So how was it making the transition to do some, you know, get your books into the U.S. audience for you as a writer? Was that difficult, challenging, or, you know, fun thing to do for getting your books out there even further?
Yeah, well, the translation itself, that was not the big deal for me, because I'm translating a lot of stuff for my regular work. So I'm just doing that. But in Germany, I started with self-publishing right away. Okay. So I didn't have, like most authors, I think, the money or resources to basically get an editor, an actual professional editor. So I had just to do it myself and redo it and edit it myself and correct it as much as I could until I felt I was ready to go.
Okay.
And now when I wanted to go to the U.S., I thought that maybe now is a good time, because English is not my mother tongue. Mm-hmm. I'm able to speak it quite okay, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I still need some professional advice on that. And that's when I really invested some money that I earned here to do a professional version of my book.
Okay.
And now the both language versions are not really the same anymore. But okay. That's okay for me, I think.
Right.
So I've been working with a professional editor, and we've been talking back and forth, and I've learned a lot in the process. So it has been different, definitely. It's felt more professionally, and I'm actually more proud of the result.
Okay. Well, I like the idea that you went ahead and self-published. I've met a lot of authors here. I'm in Arizona, and I met a lot of authors that I think have great books, but they won't self-publish. They're kind of like, well, I'm just going to keep putting it out there until someone picks it up. And I'm like, oh my God, do you know how hard that is to, you know, do that? And I'm almost like, just go ahead and self-publish. I know lots of writers that have self-published and have done very well. I even know some that have self-published and got picked up by, you know, larger publishing houses after they, you know, published and they put it out on Amazon. So when it comes to doing book signings and being out among people and talking about your book, have you done a lot of that yourself as well?
Not yet, because when I reached the stage that I was like a little more known, that's when the pandemic hit. And there was
okay. All right. So we're all like on shutdown.
Yeah.
So, but actually a good time to work, though. I mean, it's a good time to catch up work or do work, or if you're late doing something, get it done. So
yeah.
That was the positive takeaway from it, you know. So so one of the things I want to ask you is, to what extent do you think science fiction actually improves, you know, technology or human life today? I mean, I know a lot of, when you think back to like some of your older sci-fi authors, it's amazing sometimes when you're reading their book and then you can relate to something that's happening 20 years later and you're like, oh my goodness, you know. And I've even asked some other writers, like, you know, how did you get to that and how do you feel about seeing that actually come to fruit, you know, you know, in real time? So, you know, how do you feel about that?
I think that the whole science fiction, or even like books in general, have a huge impact on development of technology, because eventually it's always the creativity that sparks the ideas that just have to be supported by science eventually.
Mm-hmm.
They would not have invented many of the things if there wouldn't have been some creative minds coming up with an idea that would be a cool thing to do.
Right, right. You have some beautiful book designs on your books. Who does the design work for you on your books? Because covers everything.
That's right. I've done, I think it was seven. The first seven covers that I had were done by some guy from Sri Lanka, I think.
right.
That was pretty cool stuff. But I have to say, because of his just super unreliable, and as a German, I hate that.
Okay, right.
I'm expecting to get an answer within at least 2 or 3 days. And
right,
that was,
right.
It was just horrible. So I've switched my cover design lately.
Yeah.
But I think the results are even better now.
Yeah, yeah. I know that.
I try to I've seen a lot of covers out there also for science fiction, and usually I'm so disappointed because it's old school.
Yes.
They look, they're like spaceships on it, but they still look like they've been done in the 80s.
Right.
I want my book covers to basically look like an action movie poster would look like.
Mm-hmm. I've seen, I get what you're saying too, because I've seen very few science fiction covers that really, you know, draw me into the book. It's really interesting. And so when you're saying that, that's true, because I think that a lot of times some people just do graphics or, you know, book covers and really don't have a wide range of, you know, I won't say experience, but maybe looking into different genres and seeing what things look like. You know, like when we say to writers, when writers say, well, you know, how do I get started in this? And we're like, one of the best things you can do is just read everything. Read everything you like to read. Just read, read, read. Read magazines, read whatever, you know, because something in them sooner or later sparks part of what you're writing, you know. So I would think the same thing would happen to graphic artists as well. And I do get the grueling part. I worked with a graphic artist, and you know, I had a vision in my mind of what it should look like, and it was kind of hilarious because they quit working with me. They're like, oh my God, you're too controlling. And I'm like, no, I just want my book cover to look right. So I get that part. I get that part. So what are your, there's a lot of sci-fi series out nowadays, and I like to know which one is probably your favorite that you like that's out there now.
Well, it might be tough to believe, but I didn't really read any sci-fi. I just played it.
Okay. Right.
It was more because I for me, it was always easier to imagine things if I can see them.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped me to figure out how to describe it in my books.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm reading, I usually go for fantasy more.
Okay. All right. And so what do you think, why fantasy? Is fantasy just because of what you like when you're playing games, or, you know, what is the difference in fantasy, why you like it more than anything else? Or does it let you kind of get out of your head and kind of, you know, go into something else?
Yeah, well, fantasy is usually set in a time that's more like medieval.
Yeah.
If I think Lord of the Rings or something like that, it's always way older.
Yeah.
And usually I think that's because they have magic. If you have magic, you're not really in the need to develop technology to help you, because you can solve it with magic. And for me, like sword fighting and all that stuff, that's way more interesting than usually most of the other genres there are out there. And magic itself is super cool. What life could be like if we had this option.
Right. And that, you know, that's a great explanation. I never heard anyone explain it like that, but that is a really great, right to the point explanation between fantasy and science fiction. So great on that one. What do you want your readers to take away from your book?
I think it's especially the first commander is about Carter being confronted with so many things that are really tough on him. He's forced into the military. He has to endure a lot. They are trying to enforce physical upgrades onto his body. They want to like decide what he has to do to his body.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I think that people who read this really realize that they have the power to still endure. They have the power to move on no matter what's happening around them,
mm-hmm.
and just still keep this little spark of hope inside that things will turn out for the better.
Right.
Which is pretty suitable to the actual situation right now.
That's true. Yeah. In my intro, I was doing some of the synopsis for the commander. And the part where he's really trying to figure out what can be done and how to get people together. And I thought that was really interesting because we're kind of in that when it comes to the vaccines. You know, which vaccine is going to be the better one? You know, are we going to take it? Are we going to not? There's so many things out there of opinions, you know. But the whole idea, I just wrote a thing yesterday talking about hope, and I said hope is hard work. Hope is not easy. It's very hard work. If you can hope, and if you just sit there, you're just dreaming, okay? But yeah, but if you're really working to go something better, it's very hard work, you know, with a lot of no accolades. You know, I my daughter wanted to be a teacher. She goes, I want all the students to come back and tell me how great their life is. I was like, yeah, maybe one student might come back and tell you.
Yeah, I think hope for someone else appears kind of naive.
Yeah.
If you're listening to someone telling their hopes, it sounds like it's utopian to a certain extent. But I think if you don't have that naivete inside, where do you take the energy to do anything?
So, you know, you're a dreamer. So tell me where you're at now. Has that exceeded your dreams, or has it just made you dream bigger?
When I started writing The Commander, I was thinking, cool, I could actually write a 4-book series, because to that point I had published 2 books before, which were separate stories. But during the process of writing The Commander, it hit me, and then I came up with my master plan, which I'm now following. I'm not even sure the exact number that I have planned right now, but it has somewhat more like 35 books that are all connected to each other.
Oh, okay.
So you have the Commander series, you have another series, they're like tons of different sub-series, but they are all like connected like the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And in the end, they will come together.
Right, right, for sure, for sure. So What is what you think is maybe the most challenging thing in the publishing industry for someone to have to deal with? And so, you know, and I'm going from your experience and what you would tell another person who's an up and coming writer.
If you're self-publishing, which is my only experience that I have, I think that the hardest part is really the whole advertising game, because it's almost impossible to be visible for anybody. With all the different options you have with Facebook ads and Google ads and whatnot, it's so tough to really know what to do to get sales. And usually people hope that if they start writing, one day they will become an author and can like live on the money they will get.
Right.
Which is happening in the rarest cases, I think.
Yes.
So you always have to keep in mind, if you earn money with it, it's fine. But you should never rely on it, because it's like up and down all the time.
Right. Definitely something you have to do out of passion for the work itself, or just doing stories that you love, period, you know, rather than for anyone else or for the money. So science fiction has a long history when it comes to which, you know, era. So which era do you consider the most effective period in the whole history of the genre?
You mean like when they were written, or the era in the books?
And the eras in the book. Yeah. So, I mean, do you think near future, or do you like further out in the future type?
I try to think about it like my books are happening between 2500 and a little later. So you still have this connection to what we know right now with technology and culture and everything, and then you look beyond that.
But right.
If you go too far, it's totally hard to even imagine it.
Yes. Yeah, it is. I think about Star Trek. My dad loved Star Trek, and reading about Gene Roddenberry and how he just made everything up, even languages, you know, he made up. So if I look at something like Star Trek or something back in the day, I still love to watch it, you know. But every so often, you know, I'm thinking about, that's. You know, not today, or, you know, but it's just really kind of fun to, you know, do that. But I'm kind of like you. I really love fantasy as well. I've met new fantasy writers to read that were actually probably never really known that well, you know. I think that some of them had great series. I was like, oh my God, this person should have been way out here, you know, such a great, you know, great read. So in your books, are you getting a great response here in the U.S., or You know, I know it's hard to kind of determine that. Looking at some of your reviews on one of the other book sites, do you think that you're getting great reviews on it, or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, the reviews that I do get, they are good.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not that many.
Yeah.
And I think that because of the whole situation, I published that book literally the day that the Capitol was raided.
Right.
That was very bad timing.
Right.
And then it was the whole election situation, so it has not been taken off the way that it would have if the situation would have been normal. So I'm a little disappointed, I gotta say.
Are you gonna do any trailers for your book?
I think we had a small one. I'm not an expert on that.
Yeah. I know, you know, when you were saying the marketing thing, I know, hey, the marketing is outrageous. Part of our company, we do marketing. And even for us, there's times that we just sit back and like, oh, my God, just, you know, with every, you know, new place to advertise, you know, especially in social media. And then, you know, every, you know, different rule of what you can do and what you can't do. And it's pretty daunting. But hopefully when the pandemic ends, I love to see people really get out with their, you know, with their books. I love to really see them get with kids, you know, sci-fi fans or enthusiasts and really get out, and hoping that here in Phoenix, we do things like that, but hoping for us to really get something where we can be outside, you know, have a writer maybe come in through, you know, through online or whatever, but to be able to get them to do some marketing just within the group of people that we want to kind of get together, which I think is cool, you know. So, yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, there are many things that are possible, but many things are tough to do if you're on your own, like a self-publisher.
Right.
You don't have the experience, you don't have the connections. So that's even another level of difficulty.
So do they have anything in Germany like Comic-Con? I mean, we call it Comic-Con here, but it's like everything now. It's science fiction, it's fantasy, it's whatever.
Yeah.
Do they have any of those? Okay. And have you been to any of them with your books?
Well, the biggest one that people like to go to where they do cosplay and all that stuff is actually the Gamescom.
Yeah.
Which is more focused on the whole video game scene.
Right.
I think we do have something like a Comic-Con, but it's not there very long.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not that big yet.
Mm-hmm.
And the times I have been there, I was not even thinking about writing a book.
So what is your next project? And I know you're working on this series, but what is your next project? It's kind of interesting how you get to, I'm going to do a series on this book rather than write one book.
Well, the Commander series is consisting of four books, so those are usually the next that I'm going to do in English.
Uh-huh.
And they're also, I have finished writing at the moment 13 titles.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So 9 of them are published in Germany, so the rest of them is coming out over the course of the next months. And there's a lot of fantasy in it. So I have like medieval fantasy. I have a planet full of magicians, which is something totally exciting.
Okay.
And right now I'm moving a little more back to the science fiction game, trying to build a character that's complementing the commander.
Mm-hmm. As a big dreamer, what would you say to our folks out here that are dreaming about doing something and haven't made that step yet?
Well, usually I'd say like dream however big you want, because you can do it eventually. It takes time, but you will be able to.
Mm-hmm.
The most important thing is the first step.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured that, or I learned that the making the decision to get started is really the most important part of it.
Okay.
Because then you stop asking if you're going to do it. You're just asking how are you going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kevin, it's been great to have you on our program today, and I would love to have you back again as you start finishing some of your other books, especially when we start having our little book concerts. I would love to have you come again and talk to some of our kids that are excited about science fiction and fantasy. And we wish you luck. I haven't got to read the whole book, but I'm really excited about reading the book. So hoping to read the book and give you back some of my feedback on it, you know, mm-hmm. as I go through it. So do you have any last thoughts for us?
Really, I think people should just get back to what they love to do instead of being scared all the time, because it's like holding us back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's very, very true. As we start to open up back here, people are, you know, starting to get out. I mean, you know, I was going out anyway because I'm a hiker, so not many people where I go hike. So, and actually it's helped me to stay sane, you know, but yeah, now I found out what can make you go crazy by working at home, okay? It's the thought of having to stay home. So, but anyway, thank you for being on our program. I really appreciate you. I know it's getting late there. All the best for your book. And kudos to your girlfriend for being that great encourager and a support for you.
I'll let her know.
Okay. Take care. Have a great one.
Thank you to our faithful listeners. This has been Living Vertical Radio, and you have been listening to our host, C. Steen Duckworth. Stay tuned to our next program. Interested in getting your business in front of a worldwide audience? Contact info@verticalmediagroup.com. That's info@verticalmediagroup.com for details. And now, a word from our sponsors.
Books that make you laugh. Books that make you scream. Books that make you hope, and books that make you dream. What's on your bookshelf? Discover the books that make you who you are on booksthatmakeyou.com. Read book reviews. Meet the authors who pour their souls into the books you love. And enter to win bookish prizes. If you're a bibliophile, then Books That Make You is your new best friend. Visit booksthatmakeyou.com or find us on Insta and Facebook.